How's it going?
Hey, going good. Oh, I love your background.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It got inspired, actually, funny enough, when we first connected for the TLB release show. I saw everyone had backgrounds are much cleaner than mine, so I had to step it up.
Well, it's cool because I wore my like pink shirt and it's like close with
Yeah.
yours, so we kind of match. It's nice.
Yeah. Stunning stuff on the background, by the way. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of my little art nook here that it's a little more colorful than most, like the kitchen, for example. So I do all my zooms from here.
Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. For those unfamiliar, this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world from the artistry to the business so you can discover the resources available to you and, most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. And if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcast medium is. And sign up for the newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com. As I mentioned, the podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Many of you may know Cross Stitch, aka Aaron Karstensen, the founder of Stitch Records. He's produced and mixed every song I've released as DB Stewart. He's even done some podcast work for me, little known secret. He has background in sound design from Berklee College of Music, and there's no one else I trust to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. The fastest way to get a hold of him is on Instagram under the handle XStitchMusic. That is the letter X, Stitch, and Music, where he also has a lot of short form production and mixing tutorials. There's also a link tree in his bio pointing to all his long form courses as well. We have an incredible guest today. So without further ado, here's the next episode of Made for Music featuring Darren Varel. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is one of the most well-rounded creatives to grace the pod. Raised in an artistic household with his grandmother and mother acting as his first teachers, he's a full-time working artist, photographer, and designer, working with the likes of Plain White Tees, Fairview, Bayside, and Chad Tepper, just to name a few. Not only that, but he's a talented singer-songwriter, inspired predominantly by the Ramones. He's one of the creative masterminds behind three long-standing projects, The Scissors, TLB, and his solo project. Got some new tunes on the way in the near future. So without further ado, please welcome a true Renaissance man, a lover of the zoos, booze, cemeteries, and Chicago Cubs, the frontman of TLB with podcast alum Tom Higginson, a master of the mic, the lens, and the easel, Darren Varel.
Wow. Thank you. Wow. I mean, my head is exploding. I'm going to have to take a minute and walk away let myself deflate. Thank you. That was an amazing intro. I appreciate it. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Like I said, you've got this very well-rounded, not just perspective, but skill set. So I'm really excited to have you here because you really understand every aspect of like the creative life cycle, if you will. So
I do my best for sure.
Yeah. Well, and for those on the audio only, he's got beautiful paintings behind him that are set up. We'll have some of this on YouTube and socials as well. Yeah, absolutely stunning stuff. So before we dive into all of that, how did music play into your life growing up?
I think like most people, at least my age, we had a lot more radio back in the day growing up. So my father would always drive us around and listen to, it was a station called Oldies 104.3 with a disc jockey named Dick Biondi. And he's like huge in the Chicago area and, it's legendary, but it was always like the Beatles, on that station. So when everybody was listening to like sort of more current music, I always kind of grew up with like older music. I always kind of been more of an old soul. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's because I kind of grew up with that kind of music, but then also my father passed away when I was 15. So my mom kind of raised me from there. And then I kind of maybe had a little bit more of her influences. But when my father would, basically with the question of the music, my father would always play old music. And I always loved that. And it seemed like something I just felt like happy in, when we drive, maybe it was the experience with him too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then when 90s, like Kurt Cobain, grunge and stuff like that popped up. And I was at the age where it's like, maybe I should take a lesson or two because I really love Nirvana. And then Kurt Cobain died. And it was like, this is what I got to do. And so I, you know, chose to find people that liked music like I did. Those really, music is the same when you break it down. If you're a musician and you play the guitar, there's like three chords behind every song, and it's really just having a great melody. But it's kind of the, you know, the way you express yourself, you know, is it more of a pop song? Is it more of like angsty grunge or whatever? I kind of figured that out as I took like maybe three lessons on the guitar. It wasn't very good. I'm not very good at like being taught stuff. Then through that, I kind of started to have my artistic life unfold because I just knew music had to be a part of it. And art was always a part of my family because my, like you said earlier, my grandmother and my mother painted all the time. So, you know, I would be around it and I was doing that in school, and I was excelling more over there than I was with math, you know? So I knew like the type of brain kind of early on that I was going to be.
I really appreciated your perspective about how music is like a part of your art. I guess, were they siloed at first or how did those integrate? Because you mentioned kind of this experience listening to the radio with your dad and then your grandmother and mother being artistic as far as the visual art, I should say.
I think that kind of happened a little bit later. I don't think that like as things happen in life, you know, you kind of like, man, I wish I knew that before when I was younger or whatever, you know, but I would always listen to music when I'd paint and stuff. And I didn't really, once I kind of got a little bit older and was playing music and touring more and stuff, I appreciated art, meaning like the medium of art, painting and stuff like that. But I never was a painter. I only would draw. My grandmother was supposed to teach me before she passed away how to paint, and I never got a chance to. And so I always kind of like held back. I was like, I never got a chance to learn from grandma. And she was so good. She was this watercolor artist that I kind of like put it on the back burner, maybe unconsciously. And I went really hard into music. And toured a lot with my band, The Scissors, which you mentioned earlier. And as things went further, I joined TLB. So that's my current band. And that in like about 2013. And it was like the perfect storm because our drummer, Tom, he's like a collector of art and now an artist himself. Our bass player, Dave, is an artist. He's an amazing painter. I should say Dave's not in the band anymore. But when this started, we would talk about doing like album covers and stuff like that. And he's like, well, why don't you come over and why don't we paint it like for real, you know? Because he hated that I was doing things digitally. So you mentioned I'm a digital artist as well. And of course, it's so much easier these days just to kind of go on Photoshop and put something together. But with TLB, we wanted to be more hands-on with the artistry of it all. So everything that we do is all like created in that traditional form. And so it's kind of, I never really thought about it this way. And when it kind of melded until you asked me the question. So this is, I'm learning a lot about myself.
There we go. That's what it's all about.
But yeah, it was around then when I think they kind of combined to be more of a potent way of being in a band is actually also working with the art and incorporating it.
That's interesting because you mentioned it would take less time, I guess, to jump into Photoshop and do that. So what is that process? Do you mind walking me through what that process looked like of getting together to paint? Because I've actually never really experienced that of two people getting together and trying to, I guess, analog style do or bring a painting to life that's like a joint work, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's like kind of funny because I put a lot of hours into like our first, I think it was like our first single, I've Been Doing Fun Shit Without You. And we were going to release two songs back then. And when we were putting it together, I spent a lot of time like kind of looking for like, you know, the brushes that make the spray paint thing. And we all like kind of like the spray paint style and street art. And we wanted that to be sort of like an aesthetic of the band. And I did. I spent a lot of time doing that to everyone, like being like, this kicks ass, except for Dave. And he's like, dude, why don't we just do this for ourselves? Why are we trying to do it? Like, and he's such a big guy about things being authentic, which I appreciate it because I think people can see through the bullshit, especially in art. Well, maybe sometimes they can see through it, but I like to think the smart ones can see through it. Anyway, he's like, come over to the house and I got a big board and we'll put together this thing and we'll do this for real. So I already kind of had the idea. So I went to like Kinko's or whatever, and I cut out all of these like sort of like headlines that had to do with like the band started because a girlfriend of mine broke up with me. It's really messy. And so I did all these kind of headlines about like kind of like devastating shit. And we wheat pasted it onto the board together. And then from there, he did the drips of like paint. So the paint dripped down. And if you've seen our cover of our first album, this is what it is, what I'm explaining. And then we kind of had this stencil idea that we were going to do. Originally, the band was called That Lion Bitch, but we changed it because, you know, that's like not, we didn't want to be looked at as like a mean misogynist group. You know, when the world changed, we changed the name just to TLB. And now we say we're tender loving boys. But so anyway, you know, the stencil though said That Lion Bitch. And so we would spray paint that on there and then pull it off. So it was kind of like whatever the backdrop was from now on. And then it carried over into our drum head before the shows. So we would just like spray paint like cool like patterns or whatever. And then on the cover, we would have that, you know, stencil, and then we would start the show. I'm actually going to be releasing a print in my photo retrospective next Monday that has one of those drum heads. So it's kind of timely you're talking about it. I just did the paragraph where I talk about the experience of that a little bit. But anyway, it kind of like organically made us understand who we are, aesthetically, who we're going to be on stage, and like this part of our like, I don't know, these days people throw around the word brand a lot, but it was sort of like the brand, you know, like the Ramones were the leather jackets, but we're going to have like the stencil and the spray paint before the show.
I always think the best way for folks to market is just like authenticity, if you truly genuinely enjoy it. So it's cool that that was an organic process to get to that point. Obviously very intentional process of bringing that out. I guess, how did that inform, or did that inform, I should say, the sound of the music you were creating?
So those songs, after, it's funny because I was in a band with the girl who broke up with me, and we were doing really well and about to get signed to a label, and like things were going really well. But of course, a lot of people, when they get like right to that finish line where they like work so hard to get there, everything implodes and everybody breaks. It's age old. And I don't know why that is, but anyway, it happened to us. And then, so from there, it was like literally the day that we announced that we were breaking up, we started TLB. I was in the basement practicing with Tom and everybody, because a couple months before we broke the band up, I had broken up with my girlfriend in the band, and we tried to make it work. And I had started writing all these kind of like sad breakup songs, but there's also those songs in there that are like, but I love you, you know?
yeah.
But those ones, there was like 30 of them, and they came out of me like water. It's funny, like when you go through something traumatic, I saw this great interview with Ethan Hawke the other day where he was talking about like, you know, you might not really appreciate art now because, you know, everything is going your way and everything. But, you know, when someone dies in your family, when you go through a breakup, when there's something that you need to understand life about, like when, you know, the art will be there for it to speak to you. And it's so true. During that time, I listened to this record from the Smoking Popes that like, just like, I heard a million times. It was my favorite record, but I really feel like I truly understood what it was when I was going through an experience, because I heard the songs differently, even though it was the most familiar record in my library. So long story short about all of that, I had given Tom all of these songs. We sat there and he's like, these are like all the A songs, like, because he's been in a like a successful band, I think he just knows how to break this shit down, you know. These are all the A songs, and these are all the B songs, and the B songs were all like the love songs, right? But the A songs were all the angsty, like, I'm getting fucked up, drinking too many beers, you know, calling you late night, like. And so at that point, he was kind of like, you have so much gold in that like punk rock vibe of like, how am I supposed to hate you when I love you style, that was immediately clear what the band was going to be. And so we just recorded the record, not knowing if we wanted to be a band or not, just for fun, to kind of help me get through a bad time. And that's kind of where it came from.
That's beautiful. Obviously, it comes from a really tough spot, but I love that it was primarily a vehicle for you to process, and then gets to then be turned over to, you know, the listeners and whatnot. But that's, so I think that's like so important. I shouldn't say that. For me personally, I feel the same way. It's like processing is, music is very much the way to process life. So what you were saying there just really resonated with me. So that's, I think, a beautiful thing that it was, this is predominantly for me. And then, oh, it's this amazing thing. Now let's get ready to kind of share it with folks. But
100%, I didn't even want to put it out. You know, at the time I was just kind of like, this is just, yeah, something that I need to help myself. And I didn't think they were even that great, but I didn't care. Like, there's something about that where, you know, I think there's a Joe Strummer quote when it's like a man, you know, has nothing to lose. He's at his most dangerous. And I think that that's like kind of the best part about that time is you know, the record label was gone. My girlfriend was gone. All the things that I thought I cared about the most in the world, they weren't there anymore. So it didn't, none of that mattered. I didn't have anything to like perform for or to write for. And the other part of that is to like, people always ask me about, I mean, Tom and I don't think it's any secret that, you know, he's the lead singer of the Plain White Tees and he's done well, but he's so much more than that. But he's always been my best friend. And there's a reason for that. Like what I'm talking about, this story, a lot of people don't really care about that kind of stuff. They don't really dig into like, you know, who these people are. They just know that they love this song and it speaks to them. But that's the kind of guy that Tom is. Like he heard these songs and wanted to help me. He wanted to help me. And that's the thing that I hope that everybody can find in their life is find a friend like that, you know, because I would have been pretty lost, you know, without having people around me for these traumatic times in my life. I'm sure you could probably relate.
That's so wonderful to hear because, like you said, I think it's getting better in recent years. But yeah, there is so much like of a two-dimensional, if not one-dimensional view of folks, especially amid success. You mentioned obviously being friends, so the Chicago scene then would be kind of where you came up. Were you based out of there at the time when all this was going down as well?
Yes. I moved to Los Angeles 2 years ago and a kind of another fresh start in my life. I guess that's kind of the artist thing. It kind of looks like, you know, go to like the Art Institute a lot when I lived in Chicago and I'd see these retrospectives of people that were great artists, but they didn't live in one place very often. They were continually moving around and it seemed to be because, you know, either one, either they're broke and they, you know, don't have any money, they got to go somewhere where they can find it, or but two, also like, you know, to try to soak up some more inspiration. And I felt like 2 years ago Chicago had given, and it had given a lot to me, but it was time for a change or whatever. So that whole scene, while it was wonderful and we met a lot of great bands, Plain White Tees came from there for sure, another band called Show Off, which did really well, and Lucky Boys Confusion, those were like the top three bands that kind of got signed to major labels and, you know, were able to leave the hometown. My band The Scissors did really well, but on like more of a lower scale, like indie punk band kind of thing. So we would tour and stuff, but we were never making any money, that's for sure. To like continue, you know, doing it.
It's expensive to be an indie musician.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you kind of have to like make some money in life to be able to continue on, you know, at least putting gas in the van and, you know, you can sleep in the van, but like that gets pretty old too. So long story short, that was a great scene. And, you know, I think I rode that out a little too long because, you know, all the way up into 2019, right before the pandemic, I was still playing shows. But, you know, it wasn't the same. The scene, a lot of people, there wasn't the same bands anymore. And I just, you know, wanted to continue my artistic life, but maybe somewhere else. And God bless all those bands. They're great. And the scene. And yeah, I think Tom's going back to do actually a show with the Lucky Boys Confusion guys in March. So, you know, it still goes on and everybody's still doing their thing. It's just like, I'm out here doing things a little different now.
Yeah. And do you feel that like refreshed perspective, or have you seen a shift, I guess, in the visual art side of things too, just being in kind of a new space?
Yeah. You know, I'll say this about Los Angeles. I found it to be very supportive. I found like Chicago was a little bit too like competitive. You know, out here, there's always like people that are like, oh, hey, I got an art show going. You want to put a couple pieces up? Oh, we got a show going. Come on out and play. Hey, like I'll fill in and bass. You don't have a bass player right now. I'll fill in on bass. Like once you start getting into like meeting people out here, which is hard to do, I feel like, especially when you're a little bit older and you haven't like cultivated the friends, you have to be present at these things, right? Like go to art shows, go to like concerts. And once you start talking to people and then they're like, oh, what do you do? Oh, cool. Let me check this out. Blah, blah, blah. Like it's really quick how it happens. But you kind of have to get off the internet and you kind of have to live in the real world. I think that's a secret that a lot of people don't really get, is that like, you know, that's still important, you know.
Especially with the pandemic, that's a tough transition to make too, where it's like, to your point, it's so important to get those in-person connections, but the one that was not accessible or as accessible for a while.
Right.
You mentioned it being a little more difficult. Was that part of like the warm-up period, I guess, is kind of moving in a time where things are still shut down, or?
That's a good question. I mean, I think at the time that I moved, I had to build like more of the art side of things, like, you know, canvases and stuff like that I was doing. So it wasn't so bad for me because a lot of what I was doing was inside, but I wasn't advertising for, 17 years or so. And so with that, like I kind of, you know, put that on the back burner. That's the funny thing about life too. For anybody listening to this, I think the more you always have a crutch and a fallback and something that's going to pay the bills. And I get it. You need to pay the bills, but it makes you comfortable. And then you can't take, if you really are serious about art, your art or your music or whatever, you then end up only giving half of your creativity to yourself and to your passion. And then you turn out to be 40, 50 years old. And then you say to yourself, whoa, like, what happened, you know, like, because it's all gone. You've given it all to somebody else and not yourself. It's, you got to be really brave and you got to be really bold, and it's never too late. I'm doing it now. And I'm literally the brokest I've ever been. And, but the happiest I've ever been, because I'm doing what I want to do. And so you got to get ready to be in the shit a little bit, you know, but it is rewarding. Eventually you just got to keep at it and not give up. But man, it's mentally very, very difficult.
Do you find you're processing in new ways, or like, is music still kind of that processing mechanism, or is it now being more channeled into the visual side? Cause you mentioned kind of giving yourself in full, and that's kind of where you're focused. And obviously I can see behind you, you've got this beautiful art and such, which takes time as well. It's like both these art forms take time to produce the final product. I guess, have you found processing kind of the new normal for you as going towards one medium or the other?
Yeah. So I think there's times in my life where like, it'll kind of, one will get more attention than the other. But as I mentioned before, like when I first got out here, you know, I started to sell my art a lot more than I kind of expected it. Like while I had the downtime in the pandemic, like most people, I was like, well, I have to be creative right now. So like I did write music a lot and I did do the art, but the art was selling, and like, you know, the music does well, but not, doesn't pay me, you know, I get 0.00001 penny for every 1,000 plays or whatever it is. So it's like, okay, well, I'm seeing something that could like sustain me in an artistic way, which I love. Maybe I should switch it up. I'm a lot happier doing that. Like, you know, the process of like painting or writing a song, when you're in that creative zone, I feel like that's the closest to God that you could ever be. Because you're quiet and you're in the moment, you're very present. And you're not, there's no anxiety in that because you're not thinking about the past or the future. You're only thinking about right now what you're doing. So it's a really beautiful place to be. And that's why I think a lot of people don't understand it, you know, right? They might say, oh, you're trying to be an artist. Well, nobody's going to buy your paintings. You're not going to do this. It's like, but it's so much more than that kind of stuff, you know? And so like, yeah, again, like I mentioned, I'm broke, you know, and I might have to like, you know, forego the Netflix subscriptions and, you know, rein back my finances a little bit, but like, that's a small price to pay right now for the happiness that I've found within that.
That's beautiful. I mean, I would love for everyone listening to go buy a bunch of paintings and then we get you to get those subscriptions back. But yeah. A lot of folks I talk to that are both on the visual and like musical side say, even if you took all the revenue streams away, if you will, it's like, I still am going to be in my room creating because right. That's going to be what I have to do.
Totally. And then, you know, there's those pressures, right? Like, you know, when the bills come up and everything, they're there. Like, I'm not the only one who's gone through this in the history of time, but I believe in the process of not, you know, not giving up. And if you're good at something, you know, these days too, it's a little hard because everybody could go online and do something and you might not be very talented at something, but people are always so supportive or whatever. And then you might go down a path where you think, I can do this and you can't, you know, I always knew that at least I had talent in the art and the music, but you know, sometimes like you mentioned before, like when did the switch happen? I just think like, maybe I'm a little more, maybe I excel a little bit more at the art than I do with music. It's nice because I excel when I have other people around me that excel as well. When I joined TLB, I was always the leader of the scissors, but with TLB, I could take like a lot of the pressure off because Tom is better than me. He's a better songwriter and he just is. He excels at that. Like he's gifted. God gave him a gift and he's very good. But it takes the pressure off of me because I don't have to be the one to lead it all the time. He knows it's, you know, technically my band because I'm more of the, where it started from, but like the guy is a fucking genius. So I send him a voice memo and my songs get infinitely better because he'll add his stuff onto it. And that's why it's always the three songwriters, me, my brother, and Eric, and Tom. It's such a perfect balance of everybody helping each other. With the art, it's just me. There's nobody else here painting these things or anything like that. It's me by myself. And I can excel the way Tom does in his songwriting in my art because that's something that I excel in, I believe at least.
I agree. And that's a beautiful thing. And it is so interesting how that can evolve because I was in bands actually with my brother as well. And he's now back in my group. But there is something so interesting about being able to have the thing that you can own end to end, which is ultimately where the solo project came from. I guess that's that I have no visual art talent. So the best I can do is empathize over the having something you can own end to end. But yeah, there is that beauty of collaboration. So that's a really phenomenal trait you've got to be able to say, hey, what do you think? And like, you know, really, truly collaborate in that sense, because it's such a, especially with music and art, such a personal experience to share. It's not, you know, like here's an assignment I was given. It's like, no, I came up with this. This is me. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, in general, like whether or not like you're handing the song off to somebody who's been nominated, you know, for Grammy of the, you know, Song of the Year, like forget that part about it. Just in general, like having to, this is why there's a lot of people that are creative that suffer from depression and anxiety, because you're putting, like I said, the process is as close to God as it can be. You're putting so much of yourself into it. And then you put it out in the world and you get two or three likes on Instagram and everybody thinks I'm a failure. Oh, wow. That is like the stupidest thing you can fucking do, because you have to put yourself out there if you're an artist. I mean, that's part of it, but you can't worry so much about what everybody else is thinking. I know it's very hard and I fall victim to that as well. Sometimes I see people painting online and I'm like, I'm no good. You know, like it's just, we're human. We're flawed in those ways. But the more you do it, the more confident you'll get. And the more, you know, songs you write, the better they'll get. But if you just kind of like coil up and say, I'm no good anymore. I'm too old, or this, you know, all of these things that like are products of what society thinks, will definitely stop you from being successful.
It's funny to think too, because like you said, with the internet, you can see everyone instantly, and our brains are just not meant to take in that much information in such a short period of time.
I agree.
And then when you step back and think about it too, I know that especially within music, it's the numbers game of how many followers do you have, listeners, et cetera, et cetera. But in the grand scheme of things, when you look back, if someone likes something 200, or if you have something that goes 200 people, and I know that's considered like small or whatever, but something's like 200 times, like that's 200 people that went by. A lot more saw, but 200 people went out of their way. And I know it's like a tap of a button or whatnot, but that, like, that's kind of a surreal thing of around the world, there's 200 people that were like, that's really cool.
100%. I mean, I definitely don't have like, you know, a million followers or any of that stuff. But I do feel like every person that does follow along on the journey, I hate to say followers or fans. I always hated that stuff. It's like, but people who are interested or inspired or get some sort of joy out of what I do. Those are like real people. Like I didn't go on there like creeping into people's DMs or hiring some bot to make it all like crazy. So like, it's also like training yourself to understand that the world online is also 100% bullshit. I mean, everybody's faking everything. Everybody's doing this and then, you know, doing their TikTok shit. And it's like, and like it's like the modern day version of the court jester. I mean, everybody's a clown on there. And this is goes back to the authenticity part about it. You have to be real. That's why I talked about earlier, some of the people that I've been working with, you asked about like a favorite photo client of mine or whatever. You can tell instantly when you work with somebody, when they're the real deal. I mean, I can at least. And if you don't, then you're blinded by the 100 million followers. And you just want to be close to that because you think fame is important. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there's something so intimate that's so interesting about like the lens in pulling something out. So I guess what is it that like stands out to you that really kind of informs whether or not a connection can be genuine between not only yourself and that artist, but then maybe them and their audience as well, which of course the content's being distributed to.
Yeah. Well, I think with anything, whether it's like, the first time you meet a musician you might work with, or yeah, shooting a photo of somebody who is, you know, some sort of personality or something like that. What does music have that draws you in sometimes with the people, right? Fucking crazy lead singers, the fucking drummer who drinks too much and jumps into the pool at the party. The characters, right? Like, why do you think Quentin Tarantino's movies are so great? Well, there's a million reasons, but everyone's a character. Everyone's a great character. Everyone's looking for that off the wall person that kind of can be a little bit of what they are and a little bit of what they're afraid to be. So when you walk into a room with somebody, you can tell when they're putting that on as a show, unless they're a really good fucking actor and you can't tell. But for the most part, you can kind of see through it when it's like, this person right now is famous or whatever that word would be, is in the public eye because they are authentically themselves and they do not give a shit. So sometimes I look for like kind of a perfect mix of the kindness and then willingness to give that side of them unapologetically, but with grace to the person that's there to capture it. And so again, like I mentioned earlier, like working with people like that who aren't worried about, I mean, maybe they know it's a business and you need to have the social media and everything and they know how to turn it on for that. That's fine. But they turn it on like that so easily because it's just who they are authentically. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Absolutely. No, I think that's so important by day. I'm like in marketing, and that the thing that I always try to push with folks is like the best marketing is going to be just the natural organic stuff. Like whatever is actually real is going to be the best way for us to bring something. It's not about manufacturing something for who we think it should be. It's about delivering the authentic to the right.
Yeah, that is part about it for sure. Yeah.
To your point earlier, I think when you were talking about the smart folks being able to see through like the bullshit and stuff like that, I think that's so true. Like we were talking about earlier, everything's documented at this point of the internet being that diary of the world. Pretty easy to start getting holes poked and everything.
And I hate to be the one to break this to all of you artists out there listening, but you know, you may not find anybody who gives a shit about you until you're not here anymore. That's like Quentin Tarantino talks about it all the time, that he may have this next film that he does be his last, because it's in my opinion, completely smart about understanding his legacy and what he's going to be looked like in the, you know, when you put the greatest directors of all time list down there, he wants to be number one. And he's cultivating that right now. A lot of people are just like, yeah, like I got to put out that one song and hopefully that does really well and it, you know, blows up. But like, it's bigger than that, right? Like if you're writing that song about, I don't know what's popular right now. Those boots, let's say those like Super Mario.
Red ones. Right. Those. Yeah.
I saw Diplo wearing them the other day on like an Instagram. I was like, what the fuck? But anyway, let's say those boots. Okay. That's like the new hip thing. And somebody's like, I got to write a song right now about that. And so it'll have all the TikTok views and all that kind of shit. It's like, well, that's fine. And it probably will, because it's the newest thing that people are looking at. And yeah, you're going to cult. But like, then you're the person who wrote the song about the fucking space boots that nobody's going to give a shit about in a month. And you're going to look dated your entire career. And one of the best points of advice that I ever got was from an engineer that's a good friend of mine when we worked all those years ago in the scissors. And he just said, you know, following trends is kind of the worst thing that you could ever do. So again, if you're in a punk band, you know, don't all of a sudden switch to dubstep because that's happening right now. Because as you can see, that's not happening anymore, you know? And so all of your songs that are dubstep, like nobody gives a shit anymore, you know? I mean, I think Skrillex put out two new records. We were talking about it the other day and they're not dubstep at all. So,
right. That was kind of, that was quite the pivot. He's completely reinventing himself because he was like metalcore. Well, it wasn't under Skrillex, but
before that, right?
Yeah, it was like before that. So it's really interesting to see, like, I guess this third wave of him.
I mean, it's just like that about what I was saying, though. You know, what are you going to be look like in 10? People should actually like ask themselves that when they're creating stuff. You know, like, is what I'm saying important enough to even say it, to put my energy into? Like, or am I only doing it because I want to like pay my bills? That's that's a valid reason. I get it. You know, sometimes you got to turn out the work to get paid. But also, like, just having a little bit of an understanding, like Tarantino does, like, what's my legacy going to be, you know?
It sounds like that's something you've considered a lot. Do you have, like, a picture or an optimal state of what the legacy, whether it be, like, the body of work or interpersonal that you've thought about?
Yeah, I definitely think that I've thought about it, especially over the last 3 years. And I think it's just kind of, like, from now on until the day I die, I want to be that guy that sits outside in Los Feliz here in California with his shirt off in the sun painting. And I don't really care if people end up saying, wow, that guy was a great artist, or if they say, oh, he just lived very well. That's what I want my legacy to be. I want people, maybe if I'm gone, to look back and say, like, wow, he put out some amazing pop art that was, you know, he could play the game and know how to, like, you know, write songs in a very polished way. I think TLB does that. If you really look at those songs, I mean, they are very put together. They're the best songs we've ever written, or I've ever written in my life. But then when you go and listen to the solo stuff, I'm singing about stuff that, like, I have something to say. So I hope that people look at me and say that I'm authentic as well. And at the end of the day, though, I just really think in this period of my life, I found what I love to do. And I can't, I've spent the time going down. I want people to say that I'd like people to think of me as being brave, you know, that I actually went and, like, said, there's this thing that was a talent that I was given and it would be a shame to waste it. And that he, despite having to live in squalor for a while, hopefully that's not forever, but despite having to live in squalor for a while, he was brave enough to follow his dreams and do it. Because you know what? Then people can say, well, maybe I can do that too. And maybe that'll help their lives. I mean, when we did TLB, you talked about that earlier. Maybe I didn't want to put those songs out, but we toured the UK and people would come outside crying about the breakup that they just went through and said that these songs changed their lives. And my brother would say to me, see, I told you, this is why you had to put these songs out, you know? And that's where the authenticity comes in, because you can see it on people's faces that they listened to the song and they related to it and it was real and there was a real connection, you know? That's a beautiful thing.
Do you have artists that, I guess, served as that for you? I know we've talked a little bit about some influences, but for you, I guess, on the flip side, I know we've talked about, like, the writing and creating to process and move through some things, but do you have, I guess, artists that have served as that, I guess, North Star for you of, hey, when I was in this time, this is who, you know, kind of pulled me
like
through?
I said, the Smoking Pope's Destination Failure record, when I went through that breakup, was, like, listening to that in a brand new way after hearing it for years and years and years. It's just like a great sounding record, which, you know, of course it moves you too, but just not in the way when you're going through a breakup. Screeching Weasel is one of my favorite punk bands. I'm not sure if you're aware of them, but they're originally from Chicago. And I just feel like that lead singer is, like, I'd say he's more hated than anything, but, like, as far as, like, what people think of him online. But he's very honest and he sings from his heart and he always has. And I feel like there's a lot of important things that he's saying in his songs. And as well as, you know, it's funny. I'm a fan of music so much. I love, like, the stuff that's put together in a nice package. Like Elvis Presley is one of my favorite artists, has always been, but I love that stuff, those 50s songs can be tied up in a nice bow. That's what we kind of try to do with TLB, like to tell the story really nice and significantly and to the point, having a great chorus hook. So yeah, like anything from Elvis to, Ricky Nelson, you know, like, who is, like, the quintessential pop, like, you know, on a TV show, you know, teen bop star. And then, you know, like, again, things that are coming from a very real place. Like, there's this band in Chicago called Meat Wave that I listen to, and they're singing about, like, what it's like to be a fucking, you know, working class everyday person in Chicago. And I, you know, I relate to that. I was, you know, living there. And then on the art side, I lived very close to the Art Institute of Chicago, and it was a great gift to my life because I would go there every weekend. I had a membership and I would walk through there, and everything that you see that I do visually is inspired in one way or another by what I took in all those times walking through there. So all of those artists, I mean, some of my favorites were Pizarro, kind of like more so of how I'm painting now, I'd say, in that style. But also, you know, there's kind of like more modern artists. Like I love like the way that Banksy could post something and move people and make them think, you know. I feel like there's got to be so much pressure behind like that artist to like think of like the next thing that's going to move people, you know.
Yeah, it's so fascinating too, because it's one of those things where nobody knows when it's going to pop up. There's that pressure, but then in the same way they disappear for a while, right. It's kind of like, oh, that's just them being Banksy, you know what I mean? It's just, yeah. It's like, oh, it's all part of the plan. Even if they're sitting there going like, I have no idea what's next, but it's like, oh, it's all like from the, it's such an interesting legacy that's been created in just atmosphere around the art.
Well, how about that though? Like, you're so good at something that whenever you do post something, you have a ton of attention. So that goes to show that you don't need to be like going, you know, you could make it happen for yourself without having to be the person who spends 90% on reels and 10% on your art, you know. Like, that doesn't sound like a very fair incorporation of your time, you know.
Right.
But most people do that these days. They're spending way more time on the videos trying to get you to be excited about some work that's kind of shitty, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it is fascinating too, because I think like we were saying, like that's what's quote unquote working, or even what like the majors are pushing as far, here's how you promote now, but it's all being put back onto the creator to then come up with the promotion as well. It's not just, hey, you create the art and then other teams are going to take it to market if you're fortunate enough to get to a point where you've got a team. It's not even those teams are going, all right, now that you've completed the art, you need to go make up all this content on top of it. And to your point, then you're fracturing what you can actually dedicate.
Right. And I get it too. Like, you know, the, like even like Saturday Night Live, I think now is like pooling a lot more people that'll be on their programming that are already built in with a huge audience, you know, but why do they have a big audience? Because they're originally creators that are really good at something. And so, okay, cool. I'll pay you X amount of dollars to be on Saturday Night Live now because you've already done the work for us, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of like musicians were always like that too, right? Like, you've toured around, you've got a lot of people interested, and now we want to sign you because, you know, there's dollars in those people that follow you.
The way that art is cultivated is very different.
Yeah.
To your point, it's there's already got to be the audience there versus, oh, we've discovered this art and we're going to build the audience.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And like I said, I don't know if any of us have the... We don't got it down to a science, but, you know, again, we're just trying to create good stuff and things that move other people, but also make us happy, you know. But at the end of the day, I feel like that's all you can really do.
Yeah, ultimately. And I think that does come through, like you said. I mean, there's even looking at the acts that have like a lot of longevity that, you know, of course, there may have been an audience before really this TikTok and Reels boom. But the ones that have the longevity really were the ones that invested in to your point, like the creativity and even the folks that leverage it well now, kind of those mechanisms. It's like there really was something before that was about the art being created for a purpose,
right?
That people have connected to.
Right. Or like, yeah, there's a bigger, like they really understand like the bigger message that they're trying to say. So all of these like shorts or whatever that they're doing are all feeding into that bigger message. Like Matthew McConaughey's fucking Instagram, I love, you know?
Right.
Well, you know, all right, just got to live, you know? It's like his message is like always so like very much like inspirational all the time. So all these like little shorts that he does is always feeding into that, like live this life that you imagined kind of mentality, this green lights, follow the things that are, you know. And I like people like that because again, it's the authenticity. I feel like he really means what he believes in the bullshit that he's putting out.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And I was saying that the other day because I'm a big fan of the movies too, and I you know, I know we have limited times, but I'll just say quickly, I've been talking, I have a podcast that I do about the movies with a friend of mine that I worked with in back in the day at this movie store called Suncoast, which was like my favorite job. We recently reconnected to do a podcast in 2020, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people started their podcasts then. But we talk so much about the movies, and like this year, I'm kind of surprised and shocked at myself that I'm saying, I want Top Gun Maverick to be the Oscar winner. That's like totally not a pick I would do. It'd always be some kind of art house movie for me. And, you know, I would probably pick Fablemans if it hadn't been for Top Gun Maverick. But last night I went to go see Amelie at the New Beverly Theater. The place was packed. And I feel like people do love movies. I feel like people do love that escape. And I feel like Tom Cruise, love him or hate him, has like dedicated his life to making sure that people come out to the theater because it was really, really, really fucked for a while with, you know, right. the experience of a movie theater. And if anybody loves film, you know that that experience is something that shouldn't be taken away. But Tom Cruise, like, okay, he knows what he's good at, making these action movies, makes Top Gun Maverick, then jumps out of a plane to market it so that people will go and do it. And it's like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I love it, you know? So that's why, like, that's why I want that to win the best picture, because I feel like that just helps art.
It is so fascinating to see kind of that pushback for how do we keep that medium alive. I love the experience of going to the theater. That's like one of my favorite family and or friend activities, is like getting a whole crew to go. So
right.
I'm with you there. And that was something that was meant to be experienced in the theater, like that, from the sound design to obviously the visuals, all that kind of stuff.
Well, and I think the same thing is just about, like, also in the same vein, you know, people going back to vinyl. Why did that become, you know, something, well, like having something tangible. Okay, well, like CDs were fine and everything like that, but that's still like this disc that can get scratched and it kind of doesn't sound as good. But then you get into the records, it's like, this was like the best medium that music ever had. Let's go back there. When you hold it in your hand, when you buy it too, that really means that you really care about that band. I mean, because you're spending $20 or whatever, $22 for the band's vinyl. And, you know, that means you really, really want that. I feel like people are getting back to that. And that's a good thing. Overall, you know, that people do want to have something physical media.
Like you said, there's so much more to it. It's like that experience. It's not only that you're really invested in that artist, but you get more of the perspective again. You've got the liner notes, you've got the actual art, and it's not just in the palm of your hand, right. you know, disappearing in 3 minutes sort right. of thing.
Yeah, so. I used to love reading like the lyrics, you know. I mean, you can go online now, I'm sure, and like see a couple places that wrote them up that are wrong, or you can get the liner notes and actually read them right from the band and what they were supposed to be, you know.
Yeah, I think people really are just yearning, especially with the digitization of everything and really mind share being what's all that's left for kind of to be taken, I guess, in a lot of ways from people's time, is like, yeah, people are like, oh wait, I need that real experience, like give me something that I can grasp onto literally and figuratively, I guess.
I mean, there's bigger conversations too to go into, which we should not go to, because I don't want to take up all your time here today, but
no,
there's like the AI stuff, you know, like a couple of weeks or again, talking about a fad, right? So like a month ago when everybody was doing that AI art stuff, it's like, well, look at all of my pictures of my, you know, it's like, the first of all, from the, like, my first reaction is like, fuck you. As an artist, that doing what you're posting is like so detrimental to my career. But I appreciate the art of technology, and even like David Hockney, I believe is the artist's name, and he just had a showing in the Art Institute of like stuff he did on his iPad, and I was like, man, that's like, is that too soon? But maybe not. Like that's kind of cool. And he's a well-celebrated artist. I don't know. I like utilizing and using technology as a tool rather than it being something that takes over a complete role in the art.
Right. What was so fascinating about that AI boom was, I think you're totally right. I know folks that like like musical artists that have used it because they were already doing their own art and they were like, I'm going to have this kind of accelerate my timeline.
You know, I the reason I said like it's time to like embrace it, but also like understand it. It's like, because I can be mad because, okay, maybe taking dollars out of my pocket as like a person who's trying to make a living in art.
Right.
But then it's also up to me to continue to be creative and find other ways to like, it pushes you to continue to be creative in the way where it's like, there's always going to be a challenge in front of you no matter what you're doing. You know, you might be a postal service worker and you love that job and that's like what drives you, but then all of a sudden now there's like robots delivering the mail to the door. What are you going to do to continue on? Tom Cruise jumping out of the goddamn plane, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that looked like it was all over for most of Hollywood people, but he found a way. And so again, sometimes the challenge and the adversity is like the fun part. Like you got to find a way to overcome that stuff too, you know? So try not to be too mad when stuff comes around like that. But yeah, like I said, that's why I said it was my initial reaction was like, fuck you.
Yeah. That would elicit the same reaction from me if someone that wasn't ever into music all of a sudden was like, look at this AI song that was posted. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. There's plenty of us creating it. And now you care about it right. Now that it's not human generated.
Yeah. What did you say earlier? There's like 100,000 songs a day. It's like with AI, can we add like another 200,000? Yes.
Spotify is working on that too, and I do worry about like it's because you don't have to pay royalties out if it's your if you own it and it's AI generated. If you own the AI, I mean, there's going to be a bunch of interesting already bunch of interesting cases of like AI music that's been created that was too similar to somebody else. And it's like, who's at fault for that? And this is going to be an interesting like legal precedent that's going to get set.
Wow.
But
sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know which way it goes, but then it's also like in one hand, I'm like, I'd like the AI to lose me. Go, oh, you know, you can't create a similar aesthetic or vibe, but then all of a sudden it becomes, if that becomes copyright precedent, well then what happens when a person has a similar vibe? And then it's the whole Robin Thicke, Marvin Gaye estate of, okay, musically, compositionally, they don't line up, but we felt the same with it. And then it's like, so it's like, yeah, I want the AI to go lose this, but then what does it mean for actual person to person stuff if the precedent is, oh, well, it was really similar, or even though it was a net new creation, it felt like something I would do. A copyright shouldn't be to, it's supposed to protect the creator, not to like, you can't copyright a vibe. You know what I mean?
Well, I can't wait to sue some robot for stealing.
Yeah, exactly. That was an exciting dive. This is fascinating to actually like talk to like a true artist about this stuff, because I'm like, yeah, I'm just sitting here with like my armchair, you know, theories.
I like it. I feel like I've learned a lot just hearing you. Again, that's another important part of, I think, just life in general. And I mentioned just getting out and like talking to people, going to shows, whatever you do, like this conversation between you and I, if we had done this through email, we wouldn't have had the experience that we're having now. It's a lot different when you get face to face, even though we are using technology, right? But we're still face to face, two people talking. I would venture to say that this conversation might go infinitely longer, and there might be beers involved had we been actually in the same room, you know?
Yeah. 100%. And hey, and that sounds lovely too. I'm trying to get down to LA sometime, and that would be fantastic. So
you got it, man. Wherever you always call me up, you got a place to stay, whatever you need.
Oh, I appreciate
sleep you. Sleep in between the paintbrushes and the canvases.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love it. And then, hey, likewise in Seattle, if you find yourself up in the Northwest. So
gotcha.
Sentiment shared.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And one thing I got to do to you, which is just a long running podcasting, is a get stumped section before we have to make sure that everyone knows what you got going on and how to support you. But and you let me know your preference. So
I'm ready.
It's been a long day. Are you headed to the graveyard or the LA Zoo?
Well, I can't do the LA Zoo because it's raining. However, I would love to go to the zoo. Yeah, it's a little bit one of those that's an experience that today I feel like I could use the love of those animals over there instead of just like, you know, the love of the environment at the cemetery. So maybe the cemetery, a rainy cemetery day in LA would be perfect.
That's quite the aesthetic for sure.
Yeah.
Along that vibe, we'll go to Ramon's Pet Cemetery or I Want to Be Sedated.
Pet Cemetery.
Same.
Yeah.
And then so TLB, I think one of the core tenets that y'all have online is a love for beer in the Cubs.
Yeah.
So if you had to choose one that you got to keep in your life, which one would you? I know a lot of
they both go hand in hand. That's hard to say, but I probably would have to say the Cubs.
Yeah, there you go.
But maybe I would say beer too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I almost was like, this is such an unfair question because they essentially are synonymous. You got to go to the Cubs game with a beer in hand. But
yeah, well, I can tell you, I quit drinking for 2 years. Actually, this last year was the first year I started drinking again. And I know I can go to Cubs games without the beer. So it's got to be the Cubs.
I dig it. And so I really have enjoyed diving into your solo material, and it posed a really interesting question from one of your songs. And I quote, "You used to be famous. What went wrong?" Do you have the answer of
that? I wrote, yes. So I used to be famous, but everything went wrong. Basically saying, if you're thinking of your fame only in the lens of the internet, then you're doomed because it's fleeting.
Mm,
yeah.
Love that.
So, you know, like take away Instagram and the person who has 100,000 followers is no longer famous.
When I was listening through that line, just like kept like running through my head after I was listening, I was like, oh, it's a really fascinating like statement. So I was interested to see what would happen if it was turned into a question of what, you know, hey, what went wrong here?
I mean, I wrote that in the pandemic and I just was really feeling that like, okay, you know, I used to be famous, you know, like that song and that False Idol song, the last couple songs that I did, and I know this is a rapid fire question or section, were kind of like, again, being pretty truthful. I never thought those songs were going to be like hit songs, but they were just things I had to comment on, right? And I think that's something I think is important. So I'm just going to say it, that I think it's an artist's duty to comment on the times that they're living in. And that's part of like the photography retrospective that I'm doing, is that I like to put, you know, little notes about where I was, what was happening in the world. And, you know, it's documented now so that future generations can go back and look at, like, you know, what that was like. Now that I go back even 2 years ago, talking about the pandemic and a song like I Used to Be Famous, I can put myself in there and listen to those lyrics and be like, holy shit. Yeah, this is a time where it's like, who's famous anymore? You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I love that. And then I guess to wrap this up, and before we, you know, make sure we shout out all the channels that people can support you on, just kind of taking a half step back in at the 10K view, on a personal level, and of course, this being made for music, like, why ultimately do you make music?
I make music, I believe, because it's something that fuels my understanding of the world and the understanding of myself and the understanding of the connections of people that are in this world with me.
Oh, I love that. And I guess on the flip side, what do you hope that people get out of your music?
I hope that they're inspired to do either that themselves or to live maybe differently in a way that could make them feel better as they go through their daily life.
Oh, I love that. Rewinding back to picking up the guitar for the first time, what are you saying to that younger self?
Enjoy the ride.
Thank you so much for your time today. This has been so fun, like truly a joy to like actually connect and dive into all this stuff. I know we've got, of course, your websites. We've got tobkicksass.com. We got darrenvarel.com. How else can people support you? What do you got going on that people should be on the lookout for? And yeah, what can we shout out here?
I think for sure the website is always the best place because it's got all of the things in one place. It's not the social media channel, like, but they're all there if you want to follow. So yeah, that's got everything all encompassing. My podcast that has to do with the movies. Just two people that used to work in a movie store talking about our favorite movies, good, bad, and otherwise. Then there's, and that's called Remainders, and that's remainderspod.com. I also do my art, as we've been talking about, and that's all found at darrenvarel.com. And then there's also my band, TLB, and that can be found at tlbkicksass.com, as you mentioned. But again, at darrenvarel.com, all those things meet, and they're all there. You can take a look at anything under the sun that I'm up to. And also here, there's an email list on there. And I don't email a lot, but when I have sales or things like that, I put them up there. And also if I'm going to be in person, which down the road here, I'm going to be doing a few art shows here in Los Angeles and California as a whole. And then we'll also be doing some more TLB shows as well that we've got lined up, but also a new TLB record this year. So that'll be good to look out for.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. This is a true pleasure. And yeah, look forward to all this great stuff. We'll be sure to shout out on here and can't wait to connect again soon.
You too. Thank you for giving artists a platform to talk about themselves. I know I spent a great time talking, but next time we talk, I'd love to hear more about you. And, you know, I'm going to be listening along and following along the podcast. So thanks for giving us a chance to talk, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers, man.
Shouts out to Darren for being on Made for Music. Be sure to check out his band TLB and his solo project wherever you get your tunes. You'll be supporting not only him, but alumni Tom Hagenson and the Humans Were Here label crew, some of whom may just be stopping by the podcast in the near future. But wait, there's more. He is currently exhibiting a couple large-scale art pieces at the Encino Terrace Gallery in, you guessed it, Encino, California, now through June 17th, 2023, for those of you listening in the distant future. And if you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, the only place I trust to mix my tunes, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Music, Stitcher, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I'll see you next time.